Welcome back to the Ojogo Bonito podcast, hosted by yours truly, Jacron. Today we have the usual panel of Mr. Ferguson and Mr. Jennings. Welcome.
Pleasure to be back, JK.
Great to be back, JK.
Now, we've had a midweek set of league fixtures. Obviously, being United fans, all three of us, we are very, very happy that we beat Tottenham Hotspur. Spurs were Spursy again, some might say, but... Yeah, what are your thoughts on those games?
Oh, I've got to say, I've only just put my Fiesta hat away. What a joyous experience. And it's so rare I've said that this season. What a joyous experience as a Man United fan. It wasn't just the scoreline. The scoreline was good, obviously, because beating Tottenham, as much as we do deride them, Tottenham have been playing very well this season, and they're very high up the table. But wow, United were fabulous.
What a performance.
I have to agree. I'm going to even go as far to say I think it's the best Premier League team performance of any team in the league this year. I think as Man United fans, we've had it pretty rough over the past nine years. And yep. I don't say that lightly, but it's hard to say, apart from, okay, you could point fingers at maybe some of the finishing, but come on to Marcus Rashford in a moment. But at the same time, this was a complete performance. The way we move the ball now is scintillating. Do I dare say the win was comfortable?
I think you do.
Yeah.
There was a really interesting thing happened, which was Lloris had a really, really good game.
Really good game.
Fantastic. And United, for all the pressure they put on, didn't score in the first half.
Yeah.
But... and this is the strangest thing about football. So often over the last 9 years, I've looked at that and gone, oh, this, we're going to throw it away in the second half then because we haven't taken our chances.
Yeah.
I never felt really any doubt about that performance. That's how assured and confident it was.
Absolutely. I agree completely. And it's hard to pick a man of the match as well. I think Bruno got it for his captain's performance in that sense. But just throughout the team, quality. Some of the roles that were being done. I mean, even Jadon Sancho in that game, high up the pitch, he played well. It, you know, didn't score, didn't get an assist, but it was the intricacies that were taking place. I think that were less obvious that really highlighted just how well the team had played. Fred, I mean, it turned up and it was some sort of combination of Kaká and Zidane.
He led the press actually, and Jadon Sancho did get an assist. He got the assist for the Fred goal because he laid it off and that allowed Fred to take it first time. I want to talk about the pressing. The pressing was scintillating, actually. So it was Rashford cutting out the passing lane from the right centre-back to the middle centre-back. You had Anthony cutting out the passing lane to the midfield. You had Fred. You had Bruno on Eve Bissouma. You had, I believe it was... Jadon Sancho on Bentancur, and that left Casemiro as a free man to just mop up in behind them.
What a player.
In front of Son and Kane. Yeah, Casemiro was my man of the match.
He's had a rough start for United, I think, because there were a few games where he looked pretty off it, and I want to blame that, to be honest, more on the state of the team when he got into it. But yeah, that was his best performance by country miles. I mean, if you've seen the pass maps from the game for Tottenham, Son and Kane didn't get a line at all, not even between each other.
Yeah.
And that's telling of just how defensively organised Man United were. And I'll repeat that just in case the listeners think that's a mistake given everything that's happened with Man United. Defensive solidarity for Manchester United.
I've got a good stat for you here, sir. So Manchester United have not lost a game of football during which Raphael Varane has played 90 minutes.
Do you know, I can't say I'm too surprised by that.
No, but we have lost games this season, haven't we?
And yes.
But just goes to show just how...
He played in the derby, though. Obviously, he went off injured.
Yes.
So, actually, I also read another stat which said that when Varane and Martinez have played the full 90 together, I believe we've only conceded something like 5 goals in 8. We kept another clean sheet, which is good. I thought Licha Martinez was fantastic against Harry Kane. Got really, really tight to him.
But he's not very good in the air, JK.
He's only three foot six.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're
doesn't
being generous
matter.
There, sir. I mean.
Doesn't matter. He's actually 5'10".
He's taller than me.
He's taller than me as well.
I don't know. I read some Arsenal fans saying he's only 2'5", so...
Still better than all their centre-backs.
on a serious point, actually, because this Ferran Martinez combination is really potent now.
Yes.
Is this the closest we will get, or will it even reach the levels of the Ferdinand Vidic partnership?
I mean, it's a great shout. I mean, Virgil van Dijk was, I think Liverpool had two good seasons, didn't they? Two and a half good seasons. And started regarding him as one of the best centre-backs, you know, in Premier League history, which I thought was ridiculous. I think we expect a bit more than that than to start talking about players in that bracket. So it's a good question, sir. What I would say is I do think it's the best centre-back partnership in the Premier League as things stand. I think the two of them work brilliantly together. I love the fact that we've got a left-sided centre-half. Mm. I think that's just something we haven't seen for such a long time. I think they probably are the best combination in the league. Can I also just, before we move on, how good is Antony?
What a player.
He's fantastic. I haven't stopped watching the gif of him getting chased up to the halfway line and spinning round two players. Oh, because you see the still shots and he's completely surrounded on the touchline. Yeah, yeah. And then he's 6 yards clear.
Yeah. It's just amazing.
And they haven't even turned around yet.
No, what a player.
I wanted to actually mention, because not many people have, in my opinion, seen this, but Varane is actually very, very two-footed. I'm not sure if you noticed it. I noticed it last season particularly. He's very comfortable on that left foot, and that's probably why he was on that left-sided centre-back. Maguire was on the left side to progress the ball with his dribbling. Martinez does that with his incisive passing. But Varane is extremely comfortable on the ball, two-footed. I do think that we'll need a long-term replacement, especially with injuries. But yes, I don't want to be a party pooper. So ultimately, great win for United. I was concerned by the Newcastle result. I thought that, again, we're not going to touch on this, but I think Ronaldo probably should have stayed on at Newcastle, because I don't think Rashford has
a nine.
Now
that you said that, I want to touch on it. Why do you think he should have stayed on? Because I've looked at Ronaldo this season and I don't think he's been worth it. Not this season.
I think that, again, if you look at everything comparing Rashford and Ronaldo as number nines, I would say that Rashford for me is not a number nine. He's an inside forward. He's similar to Rafael Leão, similar to Darwin Nunez, not only in height, but I'd say in build.
I would absolutely agree with you that Rashford probably won't be the answer to our number nine problems going forwards, but I still think he's a better option than Ronaldo is at the moment.
Because he's much more dynamic, isn't he?
He is. And Ronaldo, it almost feels like slander to talk about one of the best players the world has ever seen in this way, but he has. He's lost his pace. He's lost a lot of his passing.
Yeah.
His finishing isn't what it used to be. And to be honest, that's even putting it kindly. You know, you're looking at the people who are coming in, like your Darwin Nunez, and they've got better finishing than Ronaldo.
Mm. Yeah, it's true. One thing about Rashford, I said this to you yesterday, Jago, didn't I? I watched Rashford's performance and it reminded me of the Rashford of 3 years ago, before this counter-attacking style was impressed upon him, this I'm going to play from the left-hand side, etc. Maybe it was slightly longer than 3 years ago. But he looked really hungry against Tottenham. His movement was better, his determination, his energy levels were higher. He did have, I think it was 3 shots on goal. None of them horrendous. I thought with the first one, it was a tight angle. The one he should have scored is where the ball's fallen to him inside the area, and he's had one touch out of his feet, and he's hit it. He's hit it quickly, but it should have been in that far corner, and it's a good height for Lloris, I think. But he looked like the player that broke onto the scene and scored twice against Arsenal. It was a similar. The header was the other chance, wasn't it? That perhaps didn't go as well as we might have hoped, because it was a great ball in. I'm encouraged. He's not the answer to our number nine. I agree with Sir. But I think Rashford is playing with much more purpose again.
I'd say that is correct. He does remind me of Rashford when he made his debut. At the same time, I think Scott McTominay. Wow, can't speak. Scott McTominay falls into the same trap of the Man United Academy Peter Pan syndrome, where we all think they're like 19, 20, 21, when McTominay's going to be 26, Rashford's going to be 25, Martial's 26 as well. So ultimately, I think Ten Hag has to start giving youth a chance. not only in the Europa League where it's must wins, but, you know, I was impressed by Pastry in pre-season. Fuck on the Pastry. Right winger, probably one of the only players who can actually put a decent cross in.
He's got a problem, Pelestri, and it's not because it's not for the want of trying either, but he's just surplus, I think. I don't feel comfortable saying that because I generally think there's a good player there and he hasn't been given a chance. He reminds me, not that he's ever going to get to the same level, but he reminds me a little bit like Diego Forlan at Man United. You know, I mean, he played as a striker. He did score goals. I know he did, but he never really got the chance, did he, to shine because of who else was in front of him. And you look at what Pelestri's got to compete up against. He's got to compete with the likes of Antony on that right-hand side now, who, you know, even at a £100 million price tag, there's arguments to say he won't be dropped just because of that, but he looks like he's on a totally different level. Sancho can play from the right. We can even put Bruno out on the right-hand side if we want to accommodate somebody else more centrally. I think Pelestri is... I hope he gets a cup run.
I think it's the same issue we had when we signed Amad Diallo.
Yes.
Because, you know, again, potentially a dynamic player in there. We've seen what he was capable of. Was it Rangers he played?
Yes.
He went up to? He didn't set the world on fire, but he had several pretty good games. I think he had one Rangers Celtic derby that he scored an equaliser or a winner in as well. You know, there was a good player in there too, like there is with Pelestri. I'd even say Pelestri has more upside than Diallo at this point.
Yeah.
But you're right, there is just... And I think it comes back to the issues that United have had previously with keeping hold of talent for too long and for rewarding contracts, which Ten Hag has come out and said he's not going to do, but that's not something you can change just by coming out and making a club statement. So,
yeah. Diallo's an interesting one because he's now at Sunderland,
yes.
And the manager has said recently that voiced this publicly as well. You watch him train, you watch him on the pitch, he's got absolutely everything you'd want in a player, but he doesn't have the end product quite yet. And he looks like, I think the coach said that he looks like he's trying to score that perfect goal every single time instead of just getting the toe poke, you know, getting the header when it needs to be there. You know, came with a big price tag, Diallo, at a young age. I'm encouraged he's out on loan. I think that's where the difference to him and Pelestri, because Pelestri's back at the club now, is that right?
Just warming the bench.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was interesting, actually, about that Tottenham game was United did have was it the Tottenham game? They had a really, really young bench. They had about four or five new academy players in there. They had Maino, I seem to remember. They had a few players along that line. They had Zidane Iqbal.
Yep.
Yes. Who's the winger as well? This is the other guy that they love.
Garnacho.
Yeah, I think he's ahead of Pelestri. I really do.
Yeah. But I was interested that Ten Hag didn't make any substitutions, considering how comfortable most of that game was. I think he was more interested in getting the first team gelling and getting used to playing 90 minutes of that level of football, which is a bit of a shame, really. I think it would have been a good chance to blood some new players, but... given the issues that United have had this season, I can't really begrudge him trying to give the first team some more momentum.
Yeah.
As much as I'd love to continue talking about Man United and I'll win. I'm going to quickly wrap up last weekend's fixtures from around the leagues. So as we get to our trusty monitor.
Well, while you're looking that up, I'd like to say congratulations to Mr. Jennings for correctly calling what now can be regarded as the failure of Steven Gerrard.
Oh, yeah. It didn't look great for him, did it, a few weeks ago? Thank you, sir. But I think probably a guess that we all could have made. It's what's interesting now is that we've now got two teams in the Midlands, in Villa and Wolves, looking for new managers. There was some talk last night that Jesse March now at Leeds could be a little bit under threat as well, which I have to say I'm surprised at. When Jesse March got the job, I thought he's not going to last 5 minutes, generally. But actually, I think he's shown himself to be a competent manager. I think Leeds do play a different style of football now than they did under Bielsa, but it's not a bad style of football. I think they were unlucky against Arsenal. But perhaps he himself could be out the door soon. Doesn't take long, does it, before the manager...
Where
we'll start.
If I was Villa, Wolves, what kind of managers would I be going for? Well, there's a certain elite tier bracket of managers: Pochettino, Tuchel, that are currently out of work. Do I think either of them will go to the Midlands? Simply no.
Poch to Villa?
Don't see it happening.
Villa, I think, this is more likely than Wolves. Wolves, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I say that as a boy who was born in Wolverhampton. But no, they absolutely do not have the same allure as even Aston Villa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Villa have had several seasons recently where they have been challenging for European places. And Wolves have, I think, had one Europa Conference League run.
They got to a cup final.
Oh, did they?
Didn't they against, was it Watford? Was it Wolves Watford a few years ago now?
I think so.
Possibly.
That will have been a few years ago at this point, though, you know, yeah. Recently.
Or semi-final, maybe.
Semi-final, yes. Was it Wolves semi-final? Watford, and then Delafay scored, Watford went to final, and then lost 6-0 to Man City.
That's right,
there
yeah.
There you go.
And, yeah, so Serie A, just quick scores on the doors. Inter, 2-0 against Salernitana. We had Barella getting a golden assist. Milan beating Hellas Verona 2-1. Tonali getting the winner. Napoli winning 3-2 against Bologna. Bologna was surprisingly good.
Mm.
Joshua Zirkzee from their summer sign from Bayern getting a goal there.
Was that because Napoli have just played quite, and no disrespect to Bologna fans at all, but is this just because Napoli had played such an intense number of games over the course of the past 2 weeks? I mean, they still managed to grind out a 3-2 result, which is great, but I looked at that and I just thought, is that just Napoli maybe a bit leggy?
They didn't have their first choice players either. Rahmani's been injured, so Juan Jesus, formerly of Roma, deputised in there for them. You had, I believe it might have been Mateus Oliveira and left back instead of Mario Rui. Osimhen came on and scored the winner, actually. So Politano went off injured. Lozano came on at halftime, scored a goal. Juan, the aforementioned Juan Jesus scored the equaliser after Zirkzee opened the scoring. Then you had Lozano and then Moussa Barrow.
How long do you think Osimhen's going to stay there?
I see Osimhen staying there a bit longer. I do see them challenging for Serie A. De Laurentiis, the owner, is not going to let them go on the cheap. So ultimately, he's going to be there for quite a while, in my opinion. They also have an alternative in Raspadori up front. I'd like to see them two together, possibly Raspadori in the 10. Although then you're thinking, where does that leave Zielinski? Because Zielinski has been amazing in the midfield three with Lobotka and Onguissa, who's been injured. I wanted to also shed light on the fact that Tanguy Ndombele, Spurs loanee, started this game. I wasn't very impressed, I'll be honest. Just a bit lethargic. Again, not very penetrative in his dribbling or passing. Onguissa just looks like a better player.
It almost feels like he's taken the Spursy with him. Because he is actually a good player.
Yes.
Whenever we used to play Spurs, I would see Ndombele on the team sheet and I'd think, okay, he's going to be quite difficult to get past, actually.
He can dribble, can't he? He can move on the ball as well.
He's a fairly good defensive disruptor as well when he needs to be.
He is.
But, yeah, I think just too often he has those games where he just goes anonymous, or even worse, he actually makes blunders.
Mm.
The game just passes him by. I think that Onguissa is actually one of my underrated players so far this season. I think he's a wonderful player. So
is he at Fulham?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a player, isn't he?
He was at Fulham. Napoli bought him for 15 million this summer, I think, which is a steal. But another player who's really, really good is their holding midfielder / central midfielder, who's called Stanislav Lobotka, who they signed from Celta Vigo. Wonderful player.
Surprise package in terms of European teams this season, JK, Napoli?
I'd say Napoli, definitely. I'd also say Udinese, again, 5th, 6th, above Inter and Juventus, who are both 8th and 9th, although Juventus I'm less surprised about than Inter.
I mean, surely you put Union Berlin in that group as well.
Oh, of course. Like,
what a great shout, sir. Yeah, absolutely. I think probably, actually, Napoli have been doing it in Europe as well, haven't they?
Yeah.
One of the two, that's a great shout.
Union Berlin, I think, are in the Conference League or the Europa League as well. So
beat Dortmund at the weekend, didn't they?
Yeah.
They're 4 points clear in the Bundesliga.
Looks like a Leicester, doesn't it?
Although, never count Bayern Munich out. That's always... You'd be very foolish to bet against Bayern Munich.
I would, but I still maintain that I think Dortmund could have a good challenge this year. Even though they are it's currently 7 points off, but they're still only three behind Bayern.
I was told something yesterday which will come as no surprise to Manchester United fans or perhaps even the world of football here. But I was told yesterday that Cristiano Ronaldo has a new club. Mm. And it is a club that he would be happy to go to. I've got no idea who it is at this point. But following what happened at the weekend as well, there is now discussions that a January departure would suit all parties. I don't think Eric Ten Hag has ever been a fan of Cristiano Ronaldo in his with his current age, wages, etc. And I just wonder if it's Bayern Munich. And I'm at this point, it's pure guesswork, but you look at what Bayern are missing at the moment. They are missing Lewandowski's goals.
And we've spoken about it before. You know, him being out of the Bayern squad now has changed how they've had to play, and I don't think they've adapted to it as well as they need to.
No, Mane's been a great addition, isn't he? But he's not in the mould of Lewandowski, and he's a different sort of player.
I wonder if it's a Turkish team, perhaps.
I don't think you want to play on that level week in, week out. I think at least the Bundesliga is a top five league.
The line I was given was that Ronaldo would be very happy with this move. So you think about what he turned down over the summer. There was one concrete offer made for him from a Saudi Arabian
Al Hilal
side, which he said absolutely not. Okay, the Turkish league is on a different level to the Saudi Arabian league in terms of caliber at this stage and the familiarity of players that we have that play in those leagues, that league. But you'd have to think that it would be one of the top four leagues.
And Bayern Munich, at least, they do carry a lot of commercial credibility as well.
Absolutely.
For all of his external projects.
He's also never played in Germany.
Mm.
Speaking of one of Ronaldo's former clubs, see what I did there. We've got El Clasico, Real Madrid against Barcelona. Thoughts on the game? Barcelona, did it disappoint? I personally thought it was a wonderful game to watch, actually. Went exactly how you would think it would. Barcelona wanted to dominate the ball. Madrid wanted to hit on the break. And also seeing the midweek against Elche, this Real Madrid team have something about them. They always do. It's Real Madrid. So
yeah, I mean, Madrid and Barcelona are clear at the top of La Liga. I've just got the table up in front of me. It's 3 points now between Madrid and Barcelona because of the El Clasico result. And then three down to Real Sociedad, who actually are on a really good run of form by the looks of things. But they aren't scoring on the same level as Madrid, and they're conceding more as well. You know, Madrid's numbers are actually pretty astonishing. They've got 25 goals scored in 10 games and 8 goals conceded. They're doing really well.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I almost think of Madrid these days as a last generation team because we've moved through the Galacticos era. But they always actually have a really solid plan for how they're going to keep their team going.
Yeah.
With Tchouaméni coming in for Casemiro, he's a really, really good player. And he's so young as well. Valverde, with his magnificent weak foot volley, was...
Valverde's got a very, very good engine on him. Mm. I saw... When I was watching the game, he was at right wing, obviously his position, but he was covering right central midfield. He was covering right back. He was everywhere. And the first goal, actually, I wanted to cover is obviously the Benzema goal. So Kroos pulls away from Busquets, gets pulled down, beautiful pass yet again. Vinicius runs onto it. Great save to Stegen. And then there's four, and I repeat, four Barcelona players on the line. And Benzema, I think it's a Sergi Roberto deflection and just gets in on his left foot. So Barcelona did disappoint me a bit. I think that playing Dembele on the left doesn't work. Rafinha didn't bring much. I would say Lewandowski missed a sitter, if you saw that. Back post, challenging Militão, and just blazed it over the bar. Possible offside, but still an XG probably of 0.95 or 0.99 or something along those lines. But second goal again, poor defending from Barcelona. They've got six players in their box. No one wants to track Fede Valverde. Takes a touch. Left foot, bottom corner to Stegen, no chance. Then they get a really, really good goal back. Valverde with his probably only blight in this game. Ansu Fati skips past him, puts a ball in with his left foot. Lewandowski flicks it on, and Ferran, who's not tracked by Mondi, gets a tap in. And then the penalty, it's a penalty nonetheless. Eric Garcia made the mistake on the second goal, brings Rodrigo down. Rodrigo slots it, game over. But Toni Kroos, for me, was actually man of the match. He ran the game. I think he made over nine recoveries, close to 90% pass completion. Modric, Kroos, Tchouaméni, again, great midfield. Apparently Kroos might retire or come to the Premier League this year. So, sorry, next season. And that's why I think a certain Jude Bellingham would be a perfect continuity player. Although, well,
this does feel like the summer where Bellingham's going to move.
Yeah.
And I think that will... I even wonder if he might end up moving in January. I think that will depend on how well his World Cup goes. But if he has a decent World Cup, I think he could be done at Dortmund. I think he's got a lot of love for Dortmund, though. Yeah. Dortmund have treated him so well, really well. I think he's vice-captain at, 19?
Yeah, he captained them, didn't he, the other week, just in that setup. So I've watched him a bit recently, and for the first time, I've seen a few chinks in his armour, shall we say. And I don't know whether that's because they're playing him further forward. He's been playing more as a 10 for Dortmund now. And he just looks a little bit less assured than he did. I don't think he played very well against Union Berlin. He's got the makings, I think we all know, as being, you know, probably the best in his position on international scale. I think you're right. I think he does leave within the next 12 months. I think he probably goes to Madrid. That is, if Toni Kroos is going to go. We've seen this type of transfer business from Madrid now for a little while, which has been alluded to already. They don't mind losing a player who is the best in their position, who perhaps has only got a couple of years left at the top, if they know they're getting somebody in who's going to do the job for the next 6 years.
And what a midfield they could have. I'm looking at their squad. They could have Tchouaméni, Camavinga, and possibly Bellingham. That's you set up for 15 years.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, 15 it is.
And imagine how much money you can save in those positions as well now.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what his contract situation's like, so whether or not a January move would be feasible for them. They don't seem to... Who's the most expensive player they've brought in recent years from Madrid? How much was Camavinga?
Camavinga was around 30... 35 because he had a year left. Tchouaméni was around 100.
Oh, right.
Okay. Yeah, he was pricey.
Tchouaméni was expensive, but I think he's so dynamic. And he was a continuity player, as I mentioned, because the plan wasn't to let Casemiro go, but United offered really good money. All parties benefited, and ultimately Casemiro left, as did Varane, as did Ramos, as did Di Maria at one point. And they brought in Alaba, who I think, even on £400,000 a week, allegedly, brings you a really, really good player centre-back, really good left-back, emergency midfielder, and emergency wide player. So that's four or five positions.
About one covered. Of the best versatility players since Philip Lahm.
Yes.
So calm, so composed. But I really want to highlight someone, actually, who doesn't get a lot of love, or hasn't been in the last couple of years, and that's Eder Militão. So he joined Madrid in 2019 after 1 year at Porto, and he was a right back, got converted to centre back at Porto, and then comes into Madrid, doesn't play very often the first couple of years. Then I think I remember the Champions League round of 16 or quarter final against Man City, where he played alongside Varane. I think this was 1920. And he looked really assured. And I was like, I see the player in here. And then now he's one of the first names on the team sheet. Very calm, composed, very athletic. And that's why I just think Alaba and Militão work, in my opinion, better than Alaba and Rudiger or Rudiger and Militão, because Alaba brings you the assuredness and also a left foot. Lest we forget, balance is key.
I do quickly want to just jump back to something that Mr. Jennings was just talking about, which is that they're not afraid to sell players at their peak. Mm. There is one glaring example where they could try and do that.
Go on.
Because they do now have the Ballon d'Or winner, Karim Benzema. Do you think they'd be willing to let him go? Because I think he is the exception to the rule. I think he is too good to go. And I think too important to go as well.
Who is there that they would bring in to replace him? It feels like Haaland is only going to be at City for maybe 3 years max. I think he goes.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness. Yeah, it's already too long.
I think he goes summer 2024. But I was also thinking about this. Juventus aren't doing very well in the league. They're probably going to finish outside Champions League places. There's a certain Dusan Vlahovic there. And that would make sense. Vlahovic would make sense. Allegedly, Madrid have a 400 million euro war chest. I think if they have their way, 100 million will go on Bellingham. If they had their way last year and Vinicius Jr. got his Spanish passport before the transfer window closed, Gabriel Jesus would be at Real Madrid. So I think Madrid will make a decision. Either if they wait for Haaland or they go for another nine this year. I do think Benzema does have one good season left in him.
I think he's got several good seasons left in him, but I think Madrid will want to... I think they want to offload him sooner than later. It's crazy that we aren't talking about Mbappe there anymore because of how badly that summer saga went.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ever going to happen.
No, I don't think it will anymore. I think Madrid have been burned by that now.
And we've got our special segment, which is my predictions league. So, Mr. Jennings, take it away.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. So this is the Jay Curran versus the rest of the world. And today it will be, of course, Jay Curran taking on Mr. Ferguson. And we're going to be basing this in around the 10 Premier League fixtures that we have coming over the course of the next few days. Kicking things off with the 12:30 fixture between Nottingham Forest and Liverpool. The rules, gents, are simple. You get your the chance to state your own score, and we'll alternate who goes first, but you cannot have the exact same score. You can have a draw if you like, but you both couldn't take a 2-2. JK, Forest versus Liverpool.
4-0 Liverpool.
Very assured there, Mr. Ferguson.
I think, looking at this, I'll just pull the Premier League table back up again because I've left it behind while I was looking at Real Madrid. Forest have had a torrid time of it. It's at home, though. I think I'm just going to go 2-0 Liverpool.
2-0 Liverpool, thank you. And then Mr. Ferguson, will stay with you for the second fixture, which is Everton versus Palace, 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Everton Palace. I think I fancy Palace for this. Everton are in a bit of a rush at the moment. And I'm not sure I see Everton getting a goal in this one, actually. I think it's going to be a scrappy 1-0 Palace.
1-0 Palace, JK?
No.
0-0. Not one for the spectator. City versus Brighton, JK?
I'm going to go 3-2 Man City.
3-2 Man City. You think Brighton will continue to score?
De Zerbi ball all the way.
Yeah, okay.
I think this could be a sleeper pick for match of the weekend. Could be really, really good, this one.
Okay.
And I think that as I try and format our scoreboard so that it shows properly and doesn't tell me that 3-2 is in fact the 2nd of March, I'll get back to that later. But I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, but I think City have got this... 4-1.
4-1, fantastic. Potentially game of the weekend then. It's the 5:30 on Saturday, Mr. Ferguson, starting with you. Chelsea versus the biggest team in Manchester, Manchester United.
I think this has got the makings of a bit of a damp squib, actually.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I'm gonna say Chelsea... go with your heart, Mr. Ferguson. I think it's going to be 2-1 United.
2-1 United. JK?
2-2.
2-2. Okay, moving on to Sunday, where we have our first game at 2 o'clock. The side currently without a first-team coach in Aston Villa versus Brentford. JK?
2-1 Brentford.
2-1 Brentford, Mr. Ferguson?
2-0 Brentford.
2-0 Brentford. Very, very interesting there. 2 o'clock, same time kickoff. Leeds versus Fulham, Mr. Ferguson.
Leeds Fulham, I've got... Who have I got for this one? I will go for Fulham, actually. I'll go for Fulham and I'll take them... I'll take them 1-0. Be safe.
1-0. And JK leads Fulham.
2-1 Fulham. Red card.
Who for?
Leeds.
Can I just mention one Leeds player who I think has got the potential to play at a much higher level, no disrespect to the Leeds fans, is Rocker in midfield. Yep. Keep an eye on him over the next two windows. I think there's a player in him. Leeds United, Fulham, great. Southampton, Arsenal. JK, you have to go first on this one.
As much as I don't like saying this, I'm going to go 2-0 Arsenal.
Let's hope that Arsenal actually get a challenging fixture coming up some point soon. Mr. Ferguson, Southampton, Arsenal.
I think this has got the trappings of a bit of a trip-up fixture for Arsenal.
Okay.
It's away at Southampton. I'm gonna go for a 1-1 here.
1-0, yeah. Maybe Shea Adams gets another goal like him as a striker. And moving on to Wolves, Leicester, Mr. Ferguson?
I mean, this is battle of the drabs at the moment. I think this is going to be a rubbish game, actually. I think this is going to be a 0-0.
Okay, 0-0 Wolves, Leicester, JK?
1-0 Wolves. Matheus Nunes to score a screamer.
Really? No continued rise in form for Leicester. Well, Leicester won yesterday as well. Okay. Spurs, Newcastle, JK, the 4:30 on Sunday.
I'm going to go 2-0 Newcastle.
Oh, my goodness me. 2-0 Newcastle away win. Ooh. And Mr. Ferguson.
I think this could turn into a bit of a score fest. I'm going to go 3-2 Tottenham.
3-2 Tottenham, which brings us on to our final game of the weekend, which takes place on Monday night at 8 o'clock between West Ham and Bournemouth. Mr. Ferguson, you're to go first.
Talk about a meaningless fixture halfway through the season. I could honestly pick anything for this and I don't think I'd be uncomfortable. So I'm going to go with home advantage. Let's go 2-1 West Ham.
2-1 West Ham.
1-0 West Ham. Although I did want to add, I want to have a special prediction for O Clásico, Porto-Benfica tonight, and also Real Madrid-Sevilla. So, Porto-Benfica, Estrela do Dragão, Mr. Ferguson.
As I quickly add it to our spreadsheet, it's the battle at the top of Liga NOS. I've been burned by going against Benfica before, so I'm going to go with them this time. I'm going to give them a 2-1.
3-1 Benfica.
Okay.
And then, last but not least, I'll start first on this one. Real Madrid, Sevilla. Sevilla in poor form. New manager, Jorge Sampaoli. I see this being a 3-1 Real Madrid. They had 3 disallowed goals against Elche midweek. Benzema, Rodrigo, and Alaba. Although the refs, the Spanish Federation, did send Madrid an email saying that the Alaba goal should have been allowed. In my opinion, Puskas goal of the year. Akin to Jack Wilshere against Norwich, but on a different level. So, yeah, that's a wrap. Thank you all for coming on.
I'll chuck in a quick Madrid-Sevilla just for the sake of it. I'll go 2-0 Madrid.
Amazing. Sorry, I forgot about that. All right, guys. Thank you for listening to the O Jogo Bonito podcast again. And, yeah, we'll see you next week. Take care. Peace.